Hello and good early morning. Still out in Vegas too, Pierre Maguire. How are you doing this morning, Pierre?
Really good, Jared. Good morning to you. Hello, Sean.
Good morning, Pierre.
All right, Pierre. Like game one, Montreal played an excellent game two first period last night. This time, though, they got the goals instead of giving up the goal. How important was that in the entire scheme of things?
Oh, you could feel a huge weight lifted off their back on the Canadiens bench. I'm standing right next to it, and it was a welcome relief, I can tell you that. It also planted a little bit of a seed of doubt in the minds of the Vegas defensemen in particular, who had such a great game one, getting three goals from three different players in game one from their defense, out shooting the Canes 18-0 from defense to defense. So it was a welcome relief. And I can tell you one thing that was established in the first probably 30 minutes of the game: Canadiens' forecheck was so consistent, it made it really hard for Vegas to get any kind of consistent attack, because so much of the Vegas attack is predicated on their defense, either making great stretch passes or jumping into the rush to create odd man rushes or getting great point shots. So the Canes did a tremendous job of everything through the first 30 minutes of the game.
Two games in a row, Pierre. What happened to the crowd and to this crazy physical start we're supposed to see in Vegas?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. First of all, they couldn't establish forecheck, because the Canes did a really good job supporting the puck and moving it out of their own zone. The addition of Jeff Petrie, Sean, to the lineup really helped Montreal. He made some really slick plays on the offensive blue line and also deep in his own zone to help the Canes alleviate some pressure in both zones. And so that helped. And then Shea Weber had an unbelievable night. It wasn't a little bit good. Shea Weber was probably as good as I've seen him play, or as well as I've seen him play in a very, very long time.
I got to ask you, Pierre, you're right beside the Montreal bench. Jeff Petrie's eyes, how scary was that to see in person?
Well, when I first saw him come out for warm-up, he skated right by me. I'm like, something must have happened with Dr. Feelgood, because the shot must not have kicked in or something. And then I started hearing different things, and I guess he had conjunctivitis or pink eye, from what I understand.
Okay.
So. That was a little bit different for sure. Yes. For sure it was a little bit different.
What was the vibe in the warm-up, him not taking the rushes, just gamesmanship? Or did you feel like he honestly wasn't playing?
No. So here's what I told my truck. I wish we had a tape of it. Okay. I said, shoot the hallway when he comes down, if he comes down. So they did. He came out. And then he took one line rush. That's it. He only took one. And he did it with Joel Edmondson. And then he skated a few laps in the neutral zone, and then he went off. So it's a couple things, and it could be he just wasn't feeling good. There had to be some kind of medical situation for him to be able to play with dislocated fingers. So either painkillers are involved, or they have to get a shot that hits the nerve, whatever. And so maybe he wasn't feeling good. And then the initial report on NHL.com was he wasn't on the roster. And I said, don't believe that. They haven't even, it was right after warm-up. I said, you have about 7 to 10 minutes to get your roster, and don't believe that. And so then they said about probably 5 minutes before they came out that he was on the roster.
Are you surprised that, given the fact that his health was, you know, even that he did dress, that it was tenuous, that they didn't go with 7D? Or is the four-line component to Montreal so important they couldn't afford to lose a forward?
They couldn't afford to lose a forward just because of the way they're playing. If you watch how they deal with the face-off situations in their own zone in particular, Phil Deneau was phenomenal last night. He put on a clinic. I think he was 63 or 64% last night. I mean, he put on a show. And Suzuki put on a show as well. He was tremendous. But I think the biggest thing is they need their four-line component. They can't. Listen, what they did last night was outstanding, but for them to play a three-line game or a three-and-a-half-line game, that would be very, very difficult against Vegas. You could see the last probably 17 minutes of that game, they were just barely hanging on. They were just barely hanging on.
I know we're respectful of Vegas, and hey, it's a semifinals, Pierre, but I looked at that lineup, and I know Stevenson's out yesterday, but my God, you have to look at that forward group, and if you're Montreal, say, after a couple of games here, we're in a pretty good situation and pretty confident going forward.
I don't know what happened to Chandler Stevenson. I have to tell you, Sean, he's an important part of their team. Vastly underrated with his speed, vastly underrated with his face-off play, and very underrated when it comes to setting up Stone and Pacioretty. So they did not have an answer for that. Now, Keegan Kolesar had a really nice assist on the first Alex Pietrangelo goal. at the end of the second period, but he's not a number one center. I mean, in a perfect world, he's probably a 3-4.
Yeah.
But they had him playing as a one last night, and then they decided to change that up a little bit, and Erik Karlsson is getting enhanced minutes because of the injury situation to Stevenson. But, no, this is going to be interesting. If Chandler can't come back, what they're going to do in the middle with the number one center.
No word at all as to what he's dealing with, Pierre?
No, and it was interesting because, as you know, I have to get to the rink really early for the COVID tests, and I was there very, very early yesterday, and I just stayed at the rink, and I didn't even know he wasn't playing until they came out for warm-up. So they're really closely guarding everything around this whole thing, and it's different this time around because you just can't get around the dressing rooms. It's
right.
It's just locked off. It's sealed off.
What's up with Cody Glass?
Good question. He's here. He's on their, you know, extra man roster, so maybe he gets a look in Game 3. It's a great question, fantastic question. It's something I thought about last night. I didn't walk back from the rink. I took the bus, but walking through the hotel to get to my room. So you never know, but it's a very good question.
Is it fair to say, you know, 2018 sixth overall draft pick, one of three first-rounders they had, that this, at least the start to his NHL career has been underwhelming? Is that fair to say?
I think it's been hiccups. You know, there's been a couple times where it's been really good and a couple times where it hadn't been so good. And so it's kind of been up and down. And so he's going to have to get more consistency. I think one of the knocks on him is not a lot of overall pure hockey strength right now, and that's going to have to be enhanced going forward. But in a small sample size, if he gets out there, I've seen him do some pretty creative things in some of the games I've done that he's played in.
My God, he's got to be better than Nick Roy, but does this kind of go back to, like, Romanov, more of a trust thing?
That's a great question. It's a very good question. And I don't know. For instance, I still don't understand why they don't trust Romanov to play. I mean, I'm just telling you straight up, he didn't have a bad game at all. He played 9 minutes in his first game, Game 4 versus Winnipeg. He played over 14 minutes in his first game against Vegas the other night, and he was fine. I know he was minus two, but it wasn't anything he did wrong. There were a lot of guys that were minus two for Montreal in Game 1. So, again, I don't know. There's a trust factor. But in terms of Cody, I have no idea why they're not putting him in.
You correctly noted in Game 1, the Montreal defense was outshot by the Vegas defense 18-0. That's one of the largest margins we've ever seen in a Stanley Cup playoff game. Last night, the Montreal defense, I added up, had four shots. Not a lot. Two for Petrie two for Weber. But did you notice that the defense was much more active last night?
Especially Joel Edmondson, 100%. And Petrie made such a difference walking the offensive blue line. And where the Canes were able to really muster a lot of offense, JR, was face-off wins in the offensive zone. And when you do that, the defensemen need to be more involved, and they were more involved, whether it was making good decisions by shooting pucks wide on purpose because Vegas was closing down the lanes, or walking to the inside part of the ice like Petrie did to set up Cole Caulfield, who eventually gets the puck to Tyler Toffoli. Just having the patience and the wherewithal to make plays like that. So I did think they were much more involved. But again, I can't stress enough, Shea Weber, as well as Petrie played, and he played really well, Shea Weber was a tower of power. He was phenomenal. He was really, really good.
Last night, Montreal dominate, draw 60-40. Suzuki loses a couple in the back of the net. Well, those perception are, to me, the odds of Vegas continuing to do that. But we shift to Montreal for Friday, Sunday. Even a couple situations like that where Deneau can hop out, is that going to be a key here for Montreal going back?
Yeah.
Going to another level, I guess, taking away that from Vegas?
Yeah, your theory is spot on. There's only one problem with it. When you ice the puck, and the Canes iced it twice before both goals, they couldn't get Suzuki off and
Deneau
on. Yeah. So that's what happened in Game 1, too, by the way. So that's something, and I know the Canes stressed less icing of the puck, so they could get Deneau out, but your theory is spot on. The only problem is when the icing happens, you can't get guys off. So that's what happened to them last night.
Is Vegas's, I'll term it a weakness down the middle right now, especially with Stevenson out. You know, the only two goals they scored last night were directly off of faceoffs. Two of the four goals in Game 1 were directly off faceoff. So the lack of scoring off rushes and off cycle plays, is that in any way attributable to not a lot of talent down the middle?
No, I think what happened last night off the cycle in particular is the Canadians in the end zone coverage, and it's something I told you guys yesterday had to be better, and it was. They took away the point shots. They were much more aggressive on the point shots, so that took away the upper cycle, and that forced them to really dump pucks into the corners rather than try to shoot pucks on goal, because Canadians were doing a good job shot blocking. Off the neutral zone, this is something that's going to be frustrating, because they did it to Toronto from game four to game seven, and they did it to Winnipeg through the four games that they played. They're playing a lock system. Montreal was in the neutral zone, JR, and it's hard to get through the neutral zone clean when that happens. So what they're going to, if I were involved, and I'm sure Pete's looking at the tape right now, you're not going to be able to carry the puck and make slick plays. You're going to have to get pucks into areas like they did in game one and just go to work and start body slamming guys and get the cycle going down low. That will force the Canadians to collapse down low, because they can't defend down low the entire night. It'll be impossible, because they're basically playing four and a half defensemen. And then when it starts to collapse, then you can start force feeding your points. Then you can start getting back to what you could deem comfortable in terms of manufacturing offense from the back end.
Stone does a lot of great things, plays properly. At the end of the day, though, he's got 5 goals, 3 assists, 15 games in. Does he got to be more productive? I mean, I expect him to be like Ryan O'Reilly or Patrice Bergeron, play all the way around, but I need some production out of you.
Yeah, and he had a fantastic opportunity in the second period. Again, in game one, he tried to go high glove side on Carey Price. This time, he tried to go low blocker, almost through the blocker in the body. And Price made a phenomenal save. But, yes, the answer is yes. Mark's got to be more productive. He's the first guy that would tell you that, by the way, Sean. He really would. He cares so much, and he's so darn intense. He really wants to win.
All right, huge win for Montreal, heading home now with the series even at 1. Tonight, series is even at 1, heading to Long Island. Expectations for what kind of game you think we'll see tonight between Tampa and the Islanders?
Vicious, how's that?
More of the shenanigans we saw in game two after, you know, all that stuff? Or you think the refs are going to get a note from the league and say, we got to stop all this consistent face-washing and neck-grabbing and everything else that's going on?
Both coaching staffs will be told that this morning if they weren't told it yesterday. They have subtle meetings before every game and every playoff series with the series supervisor. The coaching staffs get the message, and then they have to relay it to the players. It depends on how the coaches relay the message to the players, but in this case, I would imagine the whistle stuff will be fine. Post-whistle stuff, they'll probably take the first two guys and engage in the shenanigans you're alluding to, JR, and they'll go to the box. But what I expect is, I think I've done every game in that building this spring into the summer, and I will tell you that it is a house of horrors if you're not ready to engage physically. They will pulverize you, I'm telling you. So they play faster and they play bigger at home, and it's because of their crowd. The crowd's right on top of you. So they better, I'm talking about Tampa, they better buckle up their bonnets tonight, because it's going to be a physical challenge. It'll be a very physical challenge.
After last year with the additions, though, are you more confident that Tampa can weather the storm?
Oh, yeah, no, it's not that they won't be able to weather it. It's just you got to be prepared for it. It's a mindset, as you know, Sean. When you go into a game like that, if you don't have the proper mindset, you could have all the toughness in the world. Guys are a little bit slow to the take, or guys don't want to engage and win a race. And when you're prepared mentally to do it, then it's a little bit different. And I have to think John Cooper will have his guys ready, but it might not be as easy as everybody thinks in game three. I think game four they'll be more adjusted to it. The first time through, it's not easy in Uniondale, I should say.
All right. That game goes at 8 o'clock tonight and here on TSN 1200. Quick one to finish with you. Jason Spezza re-ups with the Maple Leafs. It's another minimum salary deal for 1 year. He's 38. The points per 60, Pierre, in terms of his point production, given the limited minutes, was amongst the NHL's best. Do you see any downside at all to this signing by Toronto?
No, zero maintenance player, guy that's proud to play there. Been a tremendous mentor to some of the younger guys. I know Matthews and Marner and even Nylander really respect him and care about him a lot. Zach Hyman, same kind of thing. Maybe this, you know, is one of those things where because Jason took a hometown quote-unquote discount, that allows him maybe to keep Zach Hyman. I don't see any downside in the deal at all. They're going to have to do some serious salary cap gymnastics to keep that team up front together. They really are.
Yeah, probably Anderson out the door. Is the real key in this offseason upgrading on Simmons, Thornton, and Foligno?
Yeah, I don't know about Foligno. I think Nicky's a pretty good player still. He wasn't 100% this playoff season. I think everybody knows that. But they're going to have to do, again, this is not going to be an easy dance for them to get through. It's going to be pretty difficult.
How is Pierre McGuire getting from Vegas to Montreal? Is the NHL have a charter, or are you commercial, and how are you getting there?
We're not allowed to go commercial. We're on a charter. Okay. There's probably around 25, 30 of us, I think, on the charter. We're leaving pretty soon, actually. And you know what I'm excited about today, JR and Sean? Usually I don't get excited about being locked in a hotel room, but as soon as I get to Montreal and check into our hotel, my mother, who's the light of my life, my mom's awesome, I haven't seen her in a long time. She had St. Hubert ordered, so Bill Micheletti, John Forsman, and I were having St. Hubert delivered to our hotel between 6 and 6.30, so I'm very grateful for my mom.
Okay, so what's your favorite part of a St. Hubert meal?
Oh, the sauce.
The sauce, yeah. Okay, all right, yeah. Kind of goes without saying, right?
So good.
But you got to do almost like Pittsburgh, though. You got to put the french fries in the sandwich, hey, Pierre, and dip it.
You're talking about Permanente brothers.
Well, for sure. Yeah. And then follow up with a 2-4 Canadian. Just hang out in the room.
That's the other dirty part of my little secret. I'm going to let it out because I'm not shy with our audience. We've been doing this for over 20 years. My mom was going on her daily walk, and she's picking up a few bottles of wine for Joe, John, and I. So that's good, too.
She is a saint, Pierre. Absolutely. Well, that's fantastic. Yeah. Enjoy. Safe travels to Montreal. Enjoy your night tonight with your St. Hubert. And you'll be fully up to date, fully mealed tomorrow morning when you rejoin us on the eve of Game 3. Appreciate the time this morning.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, JR. Sean, take care. Have a great day, everybody.